Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. I don't know what episode this number is, but the important thing is that I got Mark Fisher back on the line to talk more about fitness, health, nutrition, all the great stuff that's going on at MFF. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So we talked, I don't know, it seems like a long time ago now. It's February now, so we probably talked in like October.
That sounds about right.
Okay, so it's been at least 4 or 5 months, and I remember when we talked back then, we talked about so much stuff that we ended up doing two episodes, but the audience out there, the people on FitCast and Twitter, really stepped up, and they had a lot of great questions and a lot of follow-ups from those last couple episodes, so we got a lot of things to talk about today. But how you been, man? You've been good. You're surviving the winter of like the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, we are. It is frigid, and I can't really complain because I work and live in the same building, so I'm somewhat impervious to the weather because I will go days at a time without leaving this building. Now that is bad for other reasons, but this time of year is kind of awesome.
Do you guys have, I know they have it on the West Coast now, but like now Amazon will deliver groceries to your house and stuff. Do you guys have that in New York?
You know, they do. And I have to say, I recently read The Everything Store, which is the book about Amazon.
Oh, yeah. I love that book.
Oh, that book is so good.
How about Jeff Bezos?
Yeah. And it really left me sort of like confused about how I sort of feel about Amazon because there's so many of their business practices. I was like, that I can't say are necessarily wrong per se. But I mean, for me, I was really disturbed when the one executive didn't want to hire the guy because she asked his approach to negotiation and he said, I look for win-win, negotiations. That means a good negotiation for me. And she was like, that's an un-Amazonian answer. You will not be hired. And I was like, oh no, oh, that's against my personal values. What do I do? Having said that, it's convenient. So
it is a weird case of, not to get too in depth into like a book discussion.
Sure.
But it's almost kind of like Apple, how like Steve Jobs was kind of a huge asshole.
Yeah, it's funny. I read that book on vacation, and then the next day I like listened to the Steve Jobs autobiography. So I sort of listened to them back to back, and I was like, man, I got to like punch tables more or something. I really got to like throw some tantrums when I go back. Yeah. And then I was like, no, I don't. That's not really me.
I guess it depends what kind of leader you want to be. I don't know.
I guess that's totally what it comes down to. And I don't think that's who I would choose to be in the world, nor who I am intuitively.
Yeah. I look at Amazon, and it's clear that they are like the online Walmart, where they squeeze the crap out of their, you know, the people that are actually producing the stuff for them.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they are so pro consumer. Like, I swear, if I ever have a problem with an order, I set up a chat and they like, no questions asked. They just refund my money. They're like, if it's under $100, they're like, they just refund my money. They don't ask me to, like, when it gets there, ship it back. They just say, yeah, we're sorry. Like, your Amazon Prime member, like, their customer service standards are just above and beyond everything else that's out there. That is kind of why, like, I stick with them. And I still spend $3,000 on an Apple MacBook because I feel like they're always going to be the ones that are going to produce a better quality product at the end of the day for me. I don't know. It's really tough. Like, it's hard to get high quality products today that aren't just being produced by people that are being, you know, morally crushed or paid horribly.
Though, I will say to their defense, as much as, you know, there were things in the book they did that I was like, I don't like. I do think you make a great point that it's not really a cut and dry. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say they're, you know, inherently evil corporation by any means. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of things they do that are good. And I do think some of it really does come from a good place. It's this sort of intense democratization idea. Because even Walmart, which, you know, has a reputation for being a little bit of an evil corporation, Sam Walton, originally, that was really his whole thing, was he had this sort of intense, zealot-like belief in improving the quality of life of people that didn't have a lot of money. And we can sort of have another conversation about how much of that was justification for, you know, a very intense, aggressive business model. But I do think there's, you know, some virtuous explanations for that type of behavior. So I find myself without a strong inclination one way or the other. It's a gray area for me. But I don't judge judge anyone for using Amazon. I'm sure I still will. So
yeah, I mean, it's I these days I try to pick my battles, and when I can do things like spend $7.50 for a dozen eggs for like pasture raised organic chickens now, like that, you know, I'll put my money towards that kind of stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, when I can get something shipped to my house in 2 days and have it be at the best price possible, it's tough to walk outside my door to buy paper towels.
Yeah, particularly when, as we said, it's not, you know, necessarily that it's the most egregious things they're doing, and it's not, you know, a cut and dry issue of them being an evil corporation. And then it would be easy because you just wouldn't give them any of your money, ideally.
Yeah.
And I do think it's appropriate to say that, particularly with our generation, the quote unquote millennials, which is like kind of a laugh out loud term, but like I get it, that's what we are.
Yeah.
Tend to be more concerned with the values of the businesses, and particularly as I get older, really is something I think about, that I'm really voting with every dollar I spend. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't pretend to do that perfectly, and I'm, you know, don't know enough about the world. I'm sure I'm buying dumb shit sometimes. It's profanity warning, sorry. Things that could be potentially supporting a less than amazing organization. Mm-hmm. But I do try to be as conscious as I can about it, and the older I'm getting, the more important it is to me to really be thoughtful about where I'm putting my money.
That's totally what it is. And I've been reading, and I swear this is on topic because I've been reading a lot about, again, the term millennials. I hate that, but the current generation and how people are consuming media, news, information, and how that is going to affect like the next generation of our clients and the next generation of our athletes. Like I see it in my middle school athletes who have incredibly short attention spans, and just reading how most news sources, like even great, I mean, quote unquote, like respectable news outlets like CNN, that it, you know, used to be known for respectable news, now in a 24-hour news cycle and needing to get traffic, are doing things like top five reasons why you shouldn't be, you know, keeping your temperature over 65 degrees in the winter and stuff like that. So I'm kind of, maybe what I'm trying to say is like what I'm reading about right now is I'm fascinated about that stuff because I'm really kind of concerned if things are going to be needing to change how we train people, how to keep them active and how to keep them accountable as we go forward. And I'm curious because, I mean, you have a lot of young people training at your facility. I mean, you guys have done a really great job of keeping, you know, strong interactions with those people. Have you seen anything like as a, like a major difference between those two generations of the people in their 40s and the people in their 20s that you think might be in that kind of millennial, you know, range or anything like that?
It's a really good question. I have to say, I haven't noticed necessarily a big difference in sort of desire for immediate gratification, which I think is part of this larger issue between 20-somethings and 40-somethings. New Yorkers tend to be very just type A in general. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I can't say that I've seen much of a difference between the generations, but I do know that something that we try to really address up front in the beginning of our relationship is that this always just takes longer than feels fair, particularly when you're dealing with people that have had success taking pills and or crash dieting. And we live in a world where you can get virtually anything virtually instantly.
Yeah.
It's very challenging to be in a world now where there's no respect for process. And not always, that's a generalization, right? But on balance, because you can get so many things so quickly, fitness and nutrition can be such like a mind because your body just doesn't care. Your body's going to do things in its own time. And that can be very challenging when someone signs up for our 6-week program. And from day one, we're like, we're looking to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week, you know, and we do a 2-week check-in and someone lost 3 pounds and we're like, that's good. And they're like, what? You know, and of course, you know, to make them the challenges in our community, one of the downsides is you're always going to have that guy who, you know, comes in at like 230 and 30% body fat who loses safely like 12 to 15 pounds in 2 weeks, most of which we know is water weight.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another of those, the double-edged dagger of being tight as a community is sometimes you have those comparisons start to play out that don't serve anyone. But we try to just be very proactive and really set expectations from day one. From the minute someone walks in the clubhouse, we just start chanting, you can't out-train your diet, over and over and over, and try to really educate them on what the expectations are for their journey.
That's a fantastic point. I love that. I love that. And yeah, we even have that like at MBSC. Like that's one of those. We have a bunch of quotes that go along our wall. That's one of the things that we try to point to our new adults. Mostly, obviously, our adults, our athletes are a little bit less concerned about fat loss. But it's something like I said. I want to continue to try to be cognizant of to just see how people are reacting to programming changes and to see if like we need to really start thinking about condensing these programs even to allow for like less rest time so people don't have a chance to start like middle school girls are going to talk to each other if you give them a second to not lift. So you got to kind of keep them moving. Otherwise you got to stop them from talking, get them to re-engage to what they were supposed to be doing. Then they have to go to that spot where they're supposed to be doing stuff. So, I mean, this is the world that I live in today, is trying to get middle school kids to not talk and to lift when we have an hour and a half to train.
Good for you.
Yeah, man, dude, good for yesterday, you. Like yesterday was a little bit rough day trying to keep people on task. It's what happens when kids come off a week of February vacation. It's hard to get them back on board.
Oh yeah. You know, they're all just cracked out.
Totally. So let's get into some questions from the audience. Like I said, you guys really stepped up, so I really appreciate everyone that sent in questions on Facebook through Mark's page or through Twitter. And this is probably a good question to start at, and I think this is from Steven. Granted that most fitness professionals agree physique transformations are more about lifestyle and diet than what is happening in the gym, how do you handle lifestyle and nutrition advice for the basic level member at MFF, who does not pay for any additional services outside of classes and training sessions, i.e. handbook, introductory course, or on-ramp program?
Great question. So this is something we've been really actually spending the past probably 9 months working on. And essentially what we do now is everyone who comes to MFF, whether they're doing a membership or a trial, as is more often the case, they do an hour-long consultation, which includes parkour stuff, asking about injury history, getting very specific about goals. We'll tend to do some quote-unquote life coaching and dig around a little bit into needs analysis about why they're really here. We take everyone through an FMS, and we also have an opportunity to really begin to indoctrinate them outside the gate on these counterintuitive basics that we've learned to be so important. So that includes things like the importance of nutrition, the importance of recovering and sleeping and really resting in between your workouts. In addition to that hour-long session, we also give them a physical handout with more information that we ask all of them to read. We have an email auto-send campaign that we send to their inboxes. And then during their first three introductory classes, where we're taking them through a sequence we call Ninja Baptism, so it's three sequential classes, it's sort of our version of the CrossFit Essentials, the instructors, as part of the class, always check in with them about, hey, are you reading your emails? Have you read the handout? What questions do you have? Now, at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do, because I think Steven's point speaks to, excuse me, if you don't have an opportunity where you're dedicating time to that particular, there's only so much you can do. But our approach has essentially been just drilling every chance we can those first few weeks and then giving them lots of resources, both with the physical handout and with the emails, and then trying to encourage conversation about it. And, you know, by no means is that perfect. There's still people that are just going to literally refuse to read everything sometimes. And I get that. That's fine. They're not always necessarily there to, you know, they sign up for a gym sometimes. It's like, I signed up for a gym. Why are you giving me all this homework? But that's sort of been our approach. And we found that to be massively helpful, because in full disclosure, for a while, I do believe there was a disconnect between our six-week makeover program, which had so much coaching. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, quite literally, most of these people are so well-educated that not only do they know more like live trainers, but like they'll probably freak out if they see you in there, because they're going to know who you are, right? That level of like they're in the game. They understand fitness. And I think we've only recently started to be very effective at cleaning that up for our regular members as well.
Let's go to a kind of like a follow-up from Stephen as well. Do you have any advice for balancing duality of the professional and personal relationships you have with clients and members? Like I was mentioning before, you know, you guys seem to really have a strong connection with your clients. It's not just like they show up for an hour, you'd say three sets of eight bench press, and then they leave.
Right.
You guys really have a really strong community at MMA.
Yeah. We do, and that's a tough question, Stephen. So the full disclosure is we just haven't had a ton of separation in the beginning. And then, frankly, we're now so big that there kind of inevitably is, just because there's, you know, we're big enough clubhouse and there's, you know, we have enough of a team to take care of that many people. But it feels different, obviously, with 800 people running around than it did with 100 people running around. But on balance, for better or for worse, we haven't really shied away from that. And quite frankly, a lot of people that started at Ninjas have become some of my best friends. We've hired a lot of the team out of the Ninjas. And particularly in the beginning, many of the Ninjas were my best friends first. So I trained almost all of my good friends, and many of the Ninjas became good friends. So it is a tangled web we weave. And my situation is a little bit unique in that I'm not in the position of a one-on-one trainer with like 9 clients, you know, or 10 clients that I see a few times a week, particularly now because I don't even do a lot of the day-to-day training. So at the moment, it's kind of a moot point for me, but I do know that when we were smaller, it was a struggle. But I personally am okay with being friends with my clients. I just never really had a problem with it. I think, you know, it depends on who you're working with. I think it depends on the ages of the people you're working with. It probably depends on even the subculture of that society. But for us, because community was so important, we you know, liked spending time with the Ninjas, and the Ninjas liked spending time with us. And I think, you know, we've been doing this several years now, so I don't think the team spends quite as much social time with the Ninjas as we used to. But it's something that, frankly, we haven't sort of shied away from. I will concede, I think you can get in a really hairy territory there, particularly if you're dealing with, like, let's just, you know, talk about this stuff, like sex with clients. It's just like a hairy thing, right? And it's something that happens at almost all gyms. And the management says, don't do it. And then it happens. Mm-hmm. And then no one talks about it. And the clients go away. And, you know, that is what it is. I mean, we, you know, like, are an interesting place now where our team honestly is like mostly in relationships and we're married. So we don't really have those challenges anymore. But a few years back, it was something that, you know, like we thought about and, you know, just kind of negotiated on a case by case basis. Because my girlfriend, you know, who I love, I met because she was training here. You know, and that's like real hairy stuff. I don't know that there is a great and obvious answer for keeping that distance, but I think that often the answer is going to come down to the values of the culture that you're working in, right? Because I would say that, you know, for us, we don't mind being emotionally intimate and really getting in there with the Ninjas, but I don't know that's going to be appropriate for a lot of places.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the whole, like, you know, dating and stuff like that with clients, because that is something that is not really talked about when people are talking about like building their business at these seminars and stuff like that. And
it's a dirty secret, right? Because every gym owner says, you know, it's forbidden basically everywhere. Mm-hmm. And even here, honestly, we're the coolest place ever. And I can't say I don't frown on it, because I do. You know what I mean? But for us right now, it's a moot point because literally everyone on the team has like significant others and or married. So it's not even anything for us to consider because we're all, you know, in happy relationships.
Well, but like making sure that you're keeping it a business first?
I think that's the key. You know, my thing is like life is messy. Human relations are messy. And, you know, for me personally, I feel weird telling someone if they really like meet and connect with someone emotionally that they could go on to marry. It feels weird to tell them, no, you can't spend time with that person. I would hope that they would behave with upstanding values in those situations, because the thing that I think we can all probably be like, oh man, roll our eyes at, is we've all known those trainer guys, mm-hmm. you know, who just like love getting it done with their clients. And to me, that's not even a business thing. That's just like, I don't think that's, you know, who I want to be as a human being. That's not really like the values that I, of the people that I most want to spend my time with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a messy, messy area, but I do know it's one of those weird things in the industry where it tends to happen everywhere and it just never really discussed.
Well, it's a chemistry project, right? I mean, you're putting people in a situation where they're wearing less clothes. They tend to be in relatively good, decent shape. So they're going to be more physically attractive right off the bat for people. I mean, for the majority of people. So you already have those things that you're throwing into the fire when you get that thing going. So like you said, it happens everywhere, in trainers dating other trainers and stuff like that. It can get messy.
And we've had several relationships in our team where people on the team, are in serious relationships with other people on the team that they met while working here. So I fully disclosed we were playing with fire, but I guess it's sort of my MO in life. And, for us, we do have a very explicit policy when we bring someone in, our quote unquote disciplinary guidelines, our pledge of honor and glory. We do go very meticulously through everything that is considered an infraction. And that is something that it's brought up. And it's brought up kind of in that way where it's this is the thing that, we don't encourage. It's kind of frowned upon. But at the same time, if you meet your soulmate here, I don't want to stand in the way of that. But, I'm just expecting everyone to behave like respectful adults and live in our values in their personal life the way they live their values at MFF.
Yeah, it's that, man, I don't envy you as a boss to have to do that stuff, man. That's got to be tough.
It's messy, but again, I'm just such a believer that as long as everyone's just being transparent and honest about it, then, at least you can have conversation about what reality is. And like I said, at the moment, this is a completely a moot point.
Yeah.
And it's also, the other thing is our team for the most part skews more early mid 30s. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm also dealing with a different age group, which just tends to handle those situations differently than if I had a bunch of 24-year-old guys that just got out of college that are drinking all the time. And you know what I mean? So I think that takes care of a lot of it for me too, because there's a different level of, life experience that means that if that was a thing, I think it would be handled a little bit differently. But as the fact of the matter is right now we have a get out of jail free card because everyone is married or in relationships.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Not bad. All right, let's go to an interesting question from Pedro, who I thought this would be I think you're a good person to ask because, again, if people follow you or MFF on Facebook, you guys are definitely out there, and we talked for two episodes about the atmosphere at your gym. Everyone is kind of encouraged to be themselves. I guess Pedro is asking, when did you actually become, or when you actually became comfortable being, he calls it weird.
Yeah, that's probably appropriate.
that's his word, but...
that's probably appropriate.
I think, I'm curious about this too, just because I think we are all weird, but especially in a professional setting, we tend to be a little bit more... shielded when it comes to talking about our love for dumb things like the Fast and Furious franchise.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think that I can't, first of all, it's very sweet of Pedro to imply that I'm totally comfortable being weird because, I don't like any life figured out. And I definitely, to this day, know there's still situations I get in and I clam up, right? Mm-hmm. And I do know that as far as the broader spectrum of humanity, I'm reasonably comfortable with my eccentricities and let my freak flag fly. But even I still have a lot of situations where I'll sort of get nervous. If I'm in a new situation that feels sort of professional and corporate, if I'm taking... a random management course somewhere and it's all 40 something, 50 something professionals that wear suits every day. I'm not leading with drag queens and clowns and porn stars. part of that is social intuition, right? And that I'm aware of, the nuances of the space. But I still honestly get nervous if I don't know someone very well. I totally concede. I still get a little nervous and I think squelch that down a little bit. And I'm lucky that most of my life in the broader both Broadway and MFF world that I live in, it's a place where people know me and expect that of me. And I feel supported and seen and feel like it's appropriate for me to behave that way. So I think that's an ongoing process even for me. And I think for people in general, I will also say, you know, people are naturally more or less weird, you know. And interestingly enough, Matt Wilson, who's one of our team members, who's like, this kid's like a genius. He was a guy who was like, he was on his way to being like a doctor, and the last minute decided he wanted to be a clown. Okay, so like that kind of guy.
Like literally wanted to be a clown?
He's a professional clown. But he's also brilliant. He's a brilliant guy. So he was essentially a clown doctor. And the work that he did was amazing because in addition to doing more conventional clown work and circus-style acts, he also spent time working in hospitals with people that were ill and would go into hospitals as a clown. And it's really amazing the stories he has about that, about what it's like when you're dealing with a terminally ill child as a clown and how you negotiate and read a room where sometimes you come in and they're not ready to receive a clown in that moment. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you become the appropriate thing for them to have some anger with. And, you know, that stuff just like blows my mind, that level of emotional sensitivity. And, you know, I think what a beautiful use of your time to give like joy and fun and smiles to people in a hospital environment. So Matt did a workshop for us about ridiculousness a few weeks ago because we've noticed.
He did a workshop on ridiculousness.
That's correct. So he did a ridiculousness workshop for us.
Did you have the guy from MTV? What's his name? Mike likes this show. Ridonculous or what is it?
No.
Ridiculousness. It's like this guy who's Robin Big, the guy from.
Okay.
Rob.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. I've heard of those guys. I don't know much about pop culture.
It's simply a show of people like getting hit in the balls.
Okay, yes, and to that. So ours is obviously a little bit different, though I do like find that sort of laugh out loud in a childish way I enjoy as well. Matt's approach was just like actually a little bit more intellectual, honestly, about like what ridiculousness means and talking to the team because, again, we have a wide variety of the human experience here and we've, I think, purposely cultivated a diverse ecosystem of personality styles and different backgrounds. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of people in MFF that think it's like hilarious to pull a Tesco out of their Speedo and like go sprinting around the block. But there's an equal number of people that are much more comfortable with spreadsheets and not really saying a lot and, you know, wearing button downs. So it's been an interesting negotiation about how do we sort of allow people both to be authentic but move them towards their version of ridiculousness. And of course, with the trainers, it's most important, right? If you're back of house, it's honestly not really that big of a deal, right? Like our assistant and our bookkeeper doesn't need to wear a tutu while they're up here in the office. Though they could, it'd be encouraged. And they're certainly, and I mean this in the best way, they're completely insane and hilarious in their own way. But for the trainers, that's in many ways part of our unique value proposition is that we're just like a little bit off. But at the same time, it's got to be authentic. So there's this constant negotiation between pushing people to live at the edge of their comfort zone, but still be true to who they are. And that's going to be different levels for different people. But I think that work is actually important because fitness for many people is a very uncomfortable thing. And when people are coming to a fitness environment, particularly a lot of our clients that have never worked out before, it is inherently an uncomfortable and scary thing. And I think it's sort of beautiful to push the trainers to a place of their own sort of discomfort, you know. And like I said, there's definitely people on our team like that are not, you know, like I think it's sort of hilarious if I dress up like in a wedding dress and I just teach in a wedding dress. I just think that's feels like a normal thing to do, whereas it's not normal for everyone. It's been a negotiation to figure out how we empower everyone to be as ridiculous as they can but honor who they are.
Where do you get a wedding dress?
I don't know. People just give us random things.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
It's like a constant challenge. We're always like getting cool things, but
I was going to say you must have like friends that are in wardrobe and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure. But we're also like bad kids. So it's like we'll get a new toy and we'll play with it for a minute. And they'll be like, I don't want this toy anymore. And then it's just sort of cluttering up the clubhouse. And as you'll see, it's not a big space. So, and cleanliness is very important to us too. So you have another tension there between keeping the space clutter free, but allowing there to be enough props and costumes for the trainers to dress up like the S&M unicorn pirate if they feel inspired.
Totally. No, I got it.
It's a negotiation for sure. Art and systems. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Art versus systems. You know, you kind of need both.
The next thing that I want to look into when I go deep into a research rabbit hole is the effect of a single testicle on people's emotions.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, there is a video in the world that I know people you know have seen of something called nutsack front squat, and I I will not give you any more details, but I'll say this video exists, and I know that, you know, Raj Law and Dean Somerset, and there's a crew of people that have seen this, so if you want to see it, but you will not be able to unsee it.
You can make sure to do that while you're not at your cubicle.
Or
in front of your family members.
Yes. This is a very specific technique, that will lead to a very unique mobilization.
Outstanding. I will not link to that in the show notes. So you're going to have to Google that.
That is actually totally hidden. Even I have my limits. There are children out there in the world.
There are. There's lots of them, actually.
I also have to say that I was not the one, dude. I can't take credit for it. There was a member of my team named Brian Patrick Murphy, who is like one of the great human beings who has ever lived. And he's that innovator, so I can't take credit for that.
And also, in case people have not listened to the previous episodes, you do not have lots of children running around the gym. When you bring stuff up like this, it's a very adult atmosphere.
Oh, for sure. And that's actually something I'm like weirdly intense about because this sounds really weird, have actually a lot of like kind of conservative values about a lot of things. I'm really sort of old fashioned. So on the one hand, I am admittedly a provocateur with other adults about things where, you know, people get like tightly wound about things, about being like, that's totally fine. You just, you know, you don't have to be here if that's not your journey. However, I do believe with children, I'm like very mindful, protective of that. And I think I might even mention this in the last show, even in my own sort of like social media, I've really been conscious, frankly, start to pull stuff back because there's too many like high school Broadway fangirls that follow me now that, you know, I just don't think it's appropriate for me to do that to them. I want that to be their parent to make that decision. So, another balancing act, I guess.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to a question from Roxy following up from the last shows that you did. Last interview, you said you believe everyone has a piece of the puzzle. How or what strategies do you implement with your staff to encourage contribution and expand their role in MFF? How do you reject an idea without hurting the person who suggested it?
Great question. Interestingly enough, Roxy Facebooked me because I know Roxy after she wrote that message. She was like, you don't have to answer that question if you don't want. I know it's like personal. And I was like, no, it's perfect. And I don't have a great answer, but I'll try. So, you know, there's another, and I apologize, I keep overqualifying, being like, I don't know that I'm actually good at it yet. But what I try to do is, really, you know, create a safe space for that type of conversation. And the more I've like learned and read, I've definitely learned like some specific strategies that are important for that. I mean, first of all, asking other people's opinions is sort of a big deal. And luckily that's something I think I've always done intuitively. I think I've been like always genuinely wanted to know what other people's perspectives are, you know, because if we have like, you know, say like a training thing and we're not sure about whatever, some sort of like, you know, minute thing about that we're coaching, you know, I want to know like, what is like Harold Gibbons think about, right? What does Kyle Langworthy think about, right? What does Liz Messina think? And I'll like ask people specifically their perspective. So I think that's helpful. But even then, depending on that person's behavioral style, some people are not, you know, always forthcoming with stuff, particularly if they disagree, particularly if they disagree with their boss. So that's where you just have to do your best to work at it nonstop every day to develop, you know, a circle of safety where people feel comfortable saying things, even if they disagree, you know. And I think people, again, it seems, my working hypothesis, when you're dealing with the away styles, they tend to not want to say anything that could be conflict related, right? They'd rather just sort of not say anything. And that, of course, we all lose, right, when that happens because we're not getting everyone's perspective. At MFF, we don't have a ton of towards styles, but the towards styles that are a little bit more yanged out will say things but are not always, like, don't always have, like, all mastery when they say it, right? So it's not always, like, as tactful as it could be. And, you know, I think both of those things are very, very normal. And right now the team is, in fact, reading a really great book about this for our, like, current, like, in-team book reading club called Crucial Conversations. And this book I had read a few years ago and I liked it, but I don't think I had enough conflict in my life to really get it. And I reread it just on a whim a couple months ago. I'm sort of rereading a lot of books from 2010, 2011, particularly books that everyone recommended. But at the time I was like, yeah. So I reread this and I was like, oh. And one of the amazing points the book makes is in any sort of conversation that could be heated or challenging of any kind, there is often a false choice between going to either silence or violence. And that's sort of their term for it, which I like better than mine because it rhymes and that's pretty cool. So you have the choice between silence and violence, but there is actually a middle path where you both share your information to sort of the shared pool of meaning of the conversation, but you do so in a way that is, you know, respectful of other parties' members and starts with the presupposition that you don't understand, you're not the master of reality. And, you know, it's easier, I think, to do than to say, but to me, like, that is the art of communication, is being able to let nothing go unsaid, right? Say what you mean what you say. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to do. And I, like I said, I don't, you know, I'm not here saying by any means that like we're great at it or perfect at it, but I do think we're probably better than most and we're working on it every day. I also think, as a second point, the leader has a lot of obligation for how that dialogue goes. And I think, you know, a thing I'm a huge, huge fan of, man, I was just talking about this weekend. There's a great book, here we go again, more books, by Marshall Goldsmith called What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
And hold on, because I'm writing that stuff down. So yeah. let's repeat. I actually sent Mike Boyle an email about Crucial Conversations as you're speaking.
Oh, nice.
Just because it's so funny that this question came up and that we're talking about it, because last week in our staff meeting, we had this super long discussion because in our staff, and like, I can share this because this is like filmed and posted online and stuff, but we have a staff of like 20, and Mike Boyle is a pretty, not that he's an intimidating person, but he's Mike Boyle. Like, he's been doing
it
forever.
He sure could be, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we have staff.
I'm scared.
Yeah, exactly. So we have staff members who sometimes feel not afraid to bring stuff up, like in like, maybe we should be doing this differently, but you know, we've had some more of like conversations that have been happening outside of our staff meeting. People don't bring it up to Mike. They just are like,
classic.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, I don't think we're doing it right. You know, I don't think we're doing such and such right, but they don't, you know, tell Mike. Instead, it's just like something that happens on side conversations.
Yeah.
So, we ended up having to like have, like, I went to Mike and said, like, Mike, like, I really think we need to either like have a like a staff meeting with senior staff to talk about this stuff, like a smaller group that is not filmed or whatever, to start getting these things out, because it's like I think we were starting to look at five dysfunctions of a team.
Yes, that's actually mandatory. Yeah. There's a 45-minute lecture of it that everyone who starts at MFF like has to watch.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
It's
amazing because it's literally five dysfunctions of a team, mm-hmm. like in 45 minutes in a very funny lecture that Patrick Lencioni gives.
Found it. Awesome.
Yeah. I also actually recommend, I just re-listened to The Advantage, which is the only book that he's written that is not told as a narrative fable, which sums up all of his beliefs about management and leadership and culture. And it's really spectacular.
All right. I apologize for people. If it's picking up my typing, that is just going to happen because I got to write this stuff down. So, okay. So I got The Advantage, and I got the other book that you mentioned that people should pick up, Critical Conversations. Crucial Conversations. And what was the book that you mentioned in between while I cut you off?
Sure. What Got You Here Won't Get You There, okay. I believe. I sometimes mess up the title. Marshall Goldsmith is the author.
I'm sure this is great podcasting as I type this into perfect. All right, got it. Awesome. Damn it, dude. I bought like $5 last time you were on. But the great thing about this is that all these books are on Audible. So they're automatically books that I will actually listen to. If I just buy a book, I tend to not like open up my Kindle to read it. But these, sure, I'll actually listen to in the car and stuff like that.
Perfect.
Awesome. All right. I will post links to all these books in the show notes too. If you're like driving right now and you don't want to pull over to write this stuff down, I'll put all the links in the show notes, so do not worry about any of that. Sorry, so, continue.
Yeah, and I would actually just love to hear you continue your story. So you guys approached...
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we ended up having like probably about an hour discussion going through the five dysfunctions of a team. And it was literally like point by point, like this is exactly what was going on at our gym, because obviously it's a business. It's not, but it is technically a team. We have like 24 full-time staff, plus we have maybe an extra six interns, and then we have some part-timers. So at the end of the day, we have maybe at least a dozen people that have been at the gym for 3+ years. There's a couple of us that have been there for over five years. So, you know, we have seen a lot of the same stuff, and then we feel like we're at the point where, you know, potentially we've gone to a seminar or something like that, or we understand a, you know, something about PRI. Like we have a couple of people that have taken PRI courses, and you know, they might feel like we're implementing some PRI stuff incorrectly, but instead of it, you know, getting brought up to Mike, it's just, you know, people after the staff meeting be like, yeah, you know, I don't think, you know, we're doing this stuff this way, but people didn't feel necessarily comfortable bringing it up in a staff meeting in front of 26, 30 people, especially when there's a camera in the back. Well, even though they can't be heard, like the microphone will never pick them up, but they never felt comfortable bringing that stuff up. But, and like you said, it's, like, I know Mike, like, I told Mike this, like, Mike, I travel with you. I've shared a hotel room with you, man. Like, I can talk to you about this stuff. I could bring this stuff up if I felt a certain way, but I think there's some staff members that either have problems bringing this stuff up. They don't feel as comfortable. They're worried about, you know, repercussions. And, like, Mike was very explicit, like, I want you guys to bring this stuff up. We fired two people at our gym in the last, like, 15 years or something like that, or... Yeah, I think it's like two people in the last 15 years. And one, and both reasons were very extreme, like termination, not because they brought something up that went against the gym. It's because they did things that were damaging to the gym.
Yeah, sure.
If that makes sense, without going into the details.
Yeah. You know, I think that's, you know, no, Kevin, it's so to your credit, and I want to thank you on Mike's behalf for being that bridge, because that's the other thing you need sometimes, frankly, in an organization, is you almost need the bridge between, like, the boss and people that don't feel comfortable talking to the boss, because most organizations have those sort of, like, right-hand men that, you know, because you can probably both understand both sides, and you know both that Mike really, I'm sure, wants to hear that. Because, listen, Mike is such a, you know, like, obviously I'm a huge Mike Boyle fan and nerd. Like, he's a super smart guy. I really believe on his personality style, he really, not that he wants to be, like argue with, but he wants to be challenged, and, like, he wants to make the best product possible.
Yeah, we change things all the time. If he sees something better, like, we are not afraid to say, all right, well, clearly this is better. Like, we're not going to just keep doing what we're doing just because it's the way we do things. We're going to do the thing that we think is better. At least try it for 12 weeks. We'll see what happens and then make changes. But, like, you're saying, like, 2015 has been my year of positivity because, and this is, I'm going to get kind of personal for a second. This is something that I've never shared. And, you know, maybe I shouldn't share it with 20,000 people, but, you know, with at work, like, It was brought up to me like, Kevin, you're kind of a dick sometimes, because you know, I'm very impatient. I'm very like, I'm like need, like, I don't like waiting for people to catch up with me when I'm doing something, or like if I'm working on a project, I get very like, man, I'm doing my part. Like, why are, like, people are not doing their part of this project that they're supposed to be doing. I'm doing my part. I'm just waiting for them to get to where I need them to be so I can continue on this project, or, you know, get it to where I think it should be. And then I get very short-sighted. I get very, you know, just like, I'm not a dick to people like on our staff. I'm more of just like very much, what's a good way to describe it? Like, basically, I was just told, Kevin, you got to chill up. You got to calm down.
Sure.
Don't get worked up, you know, so easily. And this is why I looked at, you know, again, you can see this stuff on Body by Bo online. So I'm not like going into anything that's like our dirty laundry. It's just a case of, you know, after staff meetings, people would talk about stuff that happened at the staff meeting, and they wouldn't be, you know, necessarily happy with it. Like, people, we started this is, again, partially my fault. It was my idea. Like, I think I got it from you too. Mike, maybe we should start doing like a book club, because you bring up all these great books and you mention these books and then people don't necessarily read them. Wouldn't it be cool if like we just had a set time, like here, we're going to read this book and then we're going to spend 30 minutes talking about this book in 4 weeks. And Mike bought a book. He bought a copy for everyone, handed them out. And I guess what he wanted was like a paragraph summary. That's it, just like a paragraph report of what you got out of the book.
Sure.
So we could go over it. And just so, you know, he made sure he didn't spend $300 or $400 on books that no one's going to read.
Yeah, sure.
So people were mad about that. I'm like, man, like this is obviously not super positive. Like maybe there's some way we have to like stop doing this, because like there was a part when I joined, and this is, I know I'm rambling. I'm like, when I joined the gym,
this is actually so helpful for me to hear this type of stuff. Cause I can, you know, just assure you that you are not alone. I think there's really organizations that have these challenges, mm-hmm. and there's organizations that have these challenges, but just don't deal with it. And they're a super dysfunctional family. They're like American Beauty, like everything's great. Everything's perfect. And I'm smiling, but I hate my life, but I'm smiling. So yeah. I just want to thank you for being open to talk about this, because frankly, I think it's useful for people out there listening, even if they don't work in the fitness industry, if they work in an organization, it's important for people to know that all organizations, like all families, all romantic relationships have challenges, because I believe it's the very point, is it provides these opportunities to expand sort of who we are and provide, enrich our own abilities for self-mastery. Mm. So I really appreciate you talking about this. This is both informative for me and I'm sure is like, probably helpful for many people listening.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
Yeah, no, like seriously, it's just a case of when you have a staff that big, people have side conversations. There's not necessarily cliques that form, but there's side groups that form that can have, you know, differing opinions. And then instead of doing anything about it, you know, this is very human that we just not necessarily bitch about it. I mean, that's what the term people would use, but people would just kind of get worked up about it instead of doing anything about it. And that's why, like I said, I'm now like a business partner with Mike on a lot of things. So I'm a little bit, I feel like a little bit more comfortable. Like Mike's not going to fire me if I bring this stuff up.
Sure.
Like even if he was in the worst possible mood, even if it was the worst possible situation, you know, I feel a little bit more comfortable doing it. So, like I literally went up to him and said, I wanted to do a whole separate, you know, staff meeting. And Mike even took that initial step. He's like, yeah, maybe you guys do a staff meeting without me even there. Like just do a staff meeting. Get all this stuff written down, type it up or whatever, and let me know what people are feeling, just so, you know, people aren't worried about,
amazing.
You know, how Mike would feel. And like, I swear, if you know Mike, like he is the last person that would ever, you know, get, you know, mad about you bringing up a disagreement in the way that we do things. Like that's what he wants. That's why he hires the people that we have, because he wants to feel like there can be a discussion. And you know, he said that, you know, going forward, I'm going to, you know, make a, you know, better step forward to make sure that people feel like they can have these conversations and people can share this information with the group and not feel like it is something they would be not talked down on or like worried about being disagreed with. But, you know, what the solution that we kind of had is that, hey, well, you know, we're going to try to do a better job at just being more vocal in the staff meetings. Like that's something that is on us to like step up. And if we have a disagreement, raise your hand and say like, yeah, Mike, I don't get that. I don't get why we're doing it that way. But also we have an hour and a half staff meeting. From now on, we're going to save that last half an hour for staff to present. So every last half an hour, there's going to be a presentation led by one of the staff members about something that they want to talk about. Like Olympic lifting, you know, someone's doing Olympic lifting. You have guys like Kevin Carr that's going to be doing like, you know, soft tissue stuff because that's, you know, specialty he does. I'm going to be doing web presence and like production of content for people that want to get their name on like the internet.
Awesome.
So it's I think it was just more of a case like people felt like they wanted to have their voices heard more than anything and not being worried about, people are just like worried about it. But like I said, There's no other, like I know a lot of people in this industry. I don't think there is anyone that is more willing to change or to be contended on stuff than Mike.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's a really awesome thing that happened there. And again, I just, you know, really want to acknowledge and salute you for having that conversation. And I think it's amazing and so gracious of Mike to be like, have the meeting without me to talk about it. I think it was a really good strategy on his part. Yeah, I think that's all amazing, dude. I mean, I think that, you know, the other point you made that makes it such a challenge is it really does require both sides, right? Yeah. So I think, you know, going back to the original question from Roxy, the leader's job is to make it as safe as they can, but they can only do so much, mm-hmm. right? You know, and there are like particular pitfalls I think like a leader can run into. So for instance, I'm a believer that particularly when someone is managing up to you, if they're giving you feedback of any kind, your only response is thank you. And that's what I remember from reading this book. There's no sort of like, oh, you know, that is true. But the reason that, nope, thank you.
Yeah.
That anytime you inadvertently in a moment of impatience, which many leaders are impatient, hence they, you know, are leaders and like run organizations, that if you squelch on someone's idea or you discount it, you then crush it sort of for forever, frankly. Mm-hmm. So you have very little margin for error as a leader, particularly in those sort of crucial moments, like in a big team meeting where everyone can see what you're doing and that's going to set the tone of the culture. Then the other point you made is so valid is also on the people that maybe don't feel comfortable to do that, particularly if they're in a way style, to take some of the responsibility that part of their job is to reach out of their comfort zone and lean forward a little bit more. And I can say that one of the most useful tools that we have used here and I have found is, I don't know if you guys have ever gotten into the behavioral style stuff like DISC. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. So behavioral styles, it's interesting. There's a few different versions of it. There's DISC, social styles, Platinum Rule, Myers-Briggs, I think is similar, but I'm actually not as familiar with that one. And the crudest way of looking at it is you can put people into four quadrants, and the quadrants are essentially, and this I'm actually stealing results, uses this actually as part of their sales program. You have sort of fact extroverts, you have fact introverts, people extroverts, and people introverts. Now, I believe results, I think they actually made up those terms, and they really, you know, they're real smart people doing great stuff over there, obviously. So that's a great hack because almost always behavioral styles are similar. And essentially, the fact extrovert, which it sounds like it could be based on what you said, could be something that is maybe where you live, Kevin, tends to be people that are fast-paced, they like results, they like to get stuff done. They tend to be leaders. They can be, but moments commanding, and they can sometimes be impatient and thoughtless because they're so focused on getting it done. Then you have fact introverts, and these tend to be people that are also like facts. They also like doing work really well, but they tend to be very slow and very meticulous. They like process. They're very analytical. So this you can think of as like your technical engineer or your coder or like your scientist who's sort of socially awkward, right? Mm-hmm. Then on the other side of the spectrum, you have your people extrovert. Now, people extrovert, like a fact extrovert, are also fast-paced. They also appreciate the big picture. However, they tend to be more focused on people, and they really value being of influence, and they like adventure, and they like the quest, and they tend to struggle being very organized because they're very, very big picture. Then in the bottom right quadrant, you have people introvert. So people introverts are slower paced. They're more focused on the details, like the fact introverts, but they're very good at listening. They're good counselors. They're good guides. So if the people extrovert is your typical fast-talking salesperson, life of the party, sort of Leo comes in and owns the room, your people introvert loves people, but they also tend to love yoga and drinking tea and sitting quietly on a mountain just thinking and really processing their feelings. And they tend to be wonderful, really listeners and counselors, and they tend to be very, very loyal. And all of these behavioral styles have pluses and minuses, and I think it's very useful in an organization, and it might be something for you guys to consider if, you know, there's around 25 of you, because you start to see that so often the disagreements and miscommunications aren't because you don't have a similar goal and doesn't even mean you have different values. It just means you have a different worldview. Mm. So there's different things that you think are important. And in fact, I'm a believer that the organization, you know, we give each other what we lack, that you want a very healthy manifestation of all of those styles, because then you have a diverse ecosystem. And if everyone feels comfortable sharing their perspective into sort of the shared pool of meaning of the organization, I feel like I'm using a lot of buzzwords right now. It's really turning me off. So I'm just going to say that and apologize. But if everyone is really sharing their perspective, you're kind of good to go, because now all of a sudden it's like The Walking Dead and you are all back to back, right? And there's all zombies around you, but you got the circle, man. And some of you've got a gun, some of you've got an arrow, some of you are just like ninja kick fighting, but you're getting the benefit of all your shared strengths and you're collectively mitigating the weaknesses that each style will tend to have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to, before, to make sure that it is something that I talked about before we wrap up is, you know, I hope this is, like you said, helpful for other people, no matter what situation that they're in. And just like I've been reading 10% Happier too, which I think is another good book that people should check out for people that are skeptical about meditation and things like that, or just reflecting on oneself and trying to be for people to observe like how they act and how they are feeling in certain situations. And it took me a while to figure out that about that whole impatience thing, about needing to take a deep breath, trying to calm down, because I'm always that person that would do things on my own. Like I started the podcast on my own. Like I always would work on projects without wanting to, like I would want to work by myself because I would not want to, you know, wait for other people to get up to speed, or wanting to make sure that everything was done the way that I wanted to get it done.
Yeah. So
that's something that I've tried really hard to work on this year, and to try to be much more much better collaborator than I have been in the past. So, again, that might be 10% Happier, might be another book that is worth checking out if people are interested in reading for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and it's to your credit, dude, that you even have awareness around those things, because my perspective is like that's kind of where it all starts, you know. And I can, you know, just say I really hear you, and I too, one of the things I struggle with is impatience, because I am also definitely like a fact extrovert. I like to go quick. I like to get it done. And I have learned that one of the most important things I can do for MFF's well-being is to master that, because frankly, it's just no one else's problem on the team. You know what I mean? It's like, and when you're the leader, like it just doesn't matter what you want. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like messed up, but like, totally. It's just like when you're dealing with your clients, like your clients don't care if you're having a bad day. It's like your team is the same way. It's like your job is to do what you need to do to get yourself in a good place mentally, emotionally, you know, spiritually, if that's your thing, and be able to kick ass, because it's just not their problem if you're having a bad day, or, you know, if someone else did something that was like maybe egregious, like, well, that is what it is. But, everyone, I believe, has a certain moral obligation, you know, in a community to mind themselves, because emotion is always contagious. But when someone has any sort of position of power in the organization, it's exponentially more contagious. And it's interesting. There's a lot of research done into this by this guy, Richard Boyatzis, who wrote a couple of great books, among them a book called Resonant Leadership and another called Primal Leadership. And I remember I took a course on Coursera that he taught, and just like blew my head open, because I was like, oh my gosh. And it's sort of intuitive when you think about it, right? It's not like really like a genius thing to say, that, you know, it's not about you get your stuff together, but it really sort of crystallized that the most important thing a leader can do for an organization is like keep themselves in a good place, so that they can sort of, you know, be like a stable, calm, assertive, supportive force for those around them.
Yeah. I've never considered myself to be like a leader in what I do, but now.
Well, it sounds like you are, my friend.
Well, I mean,
sounds like you are.
Like I run all these side businesses now through our facility, where I'm like, oh yeah, actually I do have to like delegate, and like, how do you delegate, you know, correctly?
Yeah.
And how do you make sure that you're listening to feedback correctly, and making sure that, you know, again, when you have a lot of stuff on your plate, to take a deep breath and just do things one at a time. And like I said before, I hope a lot of people can like take this stuff. And this is so important just in terms of overall health and, you know, fitness and how you look at all this stuff. It's a really big picture thing.
Yeah, because these things also, I think, really also affect your clients, honestly.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Ultimately, there's, I think, you know, understanding other human beings and understanding the finer points of communication is so important, so important to what any fitness professional does. This past weekend, we hosted Coach Steve Ledbetter had one of his Motivate summits here, and it was like a really. I mean, there's many amazing things to say about the event, and Steve, of course, is such a smart guy, and there's so many, you know, great things to say about him and his like great approach to this. But it was really refreshing that it was like a fitness conference, and we like only talked about the motivation piece.
Yeah.
We only talked about behavioral change, and I think that, you know, and I know this is something you're totally hip to as well. It's really just the leading edge. You know, like you can almost like close the knowledge gap, even as a trainer, quite frankly, within a few years, where you have enough information about like anatomy and program design and, you know, macronutrients, where like you know enough to help people, then the entire piece just becomes like, how do I successfully communicate to different people and really meet people where they're at? And, you know, I think Coach Steve-O is definitely doing some great work in that realm, and I really valued a lot of the stuff I got to learn this weekend.
Totally. If you haven't listened to it, go back. I think it's probably like 6 or 7 episodes ago now where he was on the show. And really just I am really enjoying the content that is going out here from like guys like you and from him. Just it's a much different perspective than if you go back and listen to shows from like 4 years ago.
I was so focused.
It was so dialed in like on the target and not necessarily looking at like the like I said, the big picture and looking at what is, you know, all the little things that contribute to the goal that you're trying to get to.
Yeah. And I think that this stuff also becomes really important when you're dealing with either general population or if you're like a FitCast listener and you're trying to create behavioral change in yourself. Because in the world of, you know, elite performance, you know, the behavioral change piece is still going to be really, really useful. But when you're dealing with highly motivated individuals, you know, oftentimes you're really just looking for like the optimal, you know, protocol, and you're dealing with just giving them the knowledge that they need to get after their dreams. Whereas the general fitness population isn't motivated in the same way, you know, so you, I think, have to be a lot more thoughtful about that type of stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of great resources and information, I think, of like knowledge out there in the world from a lot of really, really bright people that, you know, seem sometimes not always to have had a lot of experience working with actual like general population people. Mm. And again, I do think it's probably easy to work with like a very dedicated physique competitor, at least as far as like they're executing the stuff. Whereas the game is almost entirely about how do I get them to do this in a sustainable way and make this, you know, a palatable habit for them to adopt.
Well, we're going to pause there. And I know we got some more questions that we can go through, but I think this might be another good jumping off point, and it'll give people another chance to send in some more questions to, I mean, if you're cool with doing a follow-up.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Because I know we're running short on time. So let's, we'll stop there. And if you do have follow-up stuff, start sending them into questions@thefitcast.com. You can also send them to @fitcast on Twitter. And also, you know, there's just go to thefitcast.com. There's actually like an email submission tab on there that you can click on and send things that way. Multiple ways to send in questions, any follow-up stuff from what we talked about today, or if you just have other stuff for Mark as well. But Mark, I want to give you a chance to you know, talk about what's coming up, because I know you got some cool seminars coming up at the gym too.
Yeah, we do. We have a few cool things coming up. The thing that probably is most interest to the FitCast listeners is Mark Fisher Fitness is actually going to host its first ever education event for trainers, and it's called the Motivation and Movement Lab, or Movement Motivation. It's one of those. I need to look that up right now, or I'm going to get fired by my own company. but we're doing a... Yeah, we're doing our own event at Mark Fisher Fitness, and it's called the Motivation and Movement Lab, and it's going to be April 25th from 9 to 6 right here in New York City, and it's going to be members of the Mark Fisher Fitness team and our special guest star, Tony Gentilcore, who I always think of on FitCast. You say, Tony Gentilcore,
oh,
that
man,
weird thing. You guys used to play that all the time, and I was always like, yes.
Tony Gentilcore. I must say that I'm going to apologize to Tony, because I think it was on the episode with Connor Ryan that I said that Tony has a like we're reminiscing about our time interning at Crusty Performance or Crusty Sports Performance, and how I always thought Tony's choice of movies was always terrible, and he sent me a heated text message last night after he listened to it. So, Tony, that was a joke. I do think you watch lots of artsy movies that are you know, that are cool. They're fine. I just, you know, I think that his we have different tastes in movies, and I like Mission Impossible 4, where he likes to see the art, you know, independent movie that I haven't heard of and has no special effects, which is cool. Those can be good too. I was just joshing you, Tony, so I apologize because you're going to listen to this one too. So sorry.
So anyway, that's the event. It's here in New York City, and we're sort of playing with the format of what a fitness conference is, because the format of essentially sitting and listening to people talk for a long lecture and maybe like a physical hands-on, I think is totally a valid way of going. We're actually spicing up a little bit in that each speaker will do essentially a 25-minute lecture followed by a 30-minute more like interactive activity of some kind, right? And probably won't even be in most cases like physical coaching. Neighbor will be like, you know, writing down things and just interacting with the material and the content that the speaker provides. So I think it's going to be just a different approach to really learning and integrating the information you get from this type of event. And I think it's going to be a fun combination both of a lot of the MFF particular stuff and the business things that we've learned, as well as a lot of great information about like actual like fitness and coaching and fitness systems and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome. So should people go to markfisherfitness.com to sign up for that?
They can actually go to motivateandmove.com.
Gotcha. All right. I'm going to make sure we get that in the show notes as well. Any other cool things coming up that you would want to mention?
Yeah, there's lots of other things, a lot of which are sort of in flux. Mm. And I think, I'll save them for our next chat. But it is, I will tease that we have a number of amazing things coming up at MFF that we're not quite ready to announce yet, but I think are going to be really cool. So
retirement is not around the corner for you.
No, it's definitely not retirement. And I'm retiring. I'm leaving the industry. Goodbye, everyone. I'm announcing on the FitCast.
Oh, man. I could get that exclusive.
Yeah, I know. Scoop.
Yeah, I just do want to take, I apologize, I should have mentioned this before, but thank you to everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. People like Penny Dalton, Control Alt Jack, John Crouch, Melissa Solon, you guys are helping to make sure that these episodes continue to get produced and that I get to talk to great people like Mark Fisher every single week. And also Patreon supporters get episodes 1 week early. So if you want to make sure that you're always up to date, you get an exclusive RSS feed and instructions on how to implement that into your favorite podcasting application or service. So Mark, obviously, thank you so much for taking the time to come back on the show. It's markfisherfitness.com. And then you can also follow Mark at mfisherfitness on Twitter. And of course, I'm sure you can find him on Facebook, since Facebook has such a great search function. Thank you so much, Mark. It's always a blast, man.
Thank you so much. And next time, hopefully we'll talk even more about actual training and nutrition.
Absolutely.
Awesome, sir. It's our time for having fun. I'm gonna